radios, the skies.
The skies.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
Believe. On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
And welcome back, everyone. Live here at The Sky, New Horizons, No Boundaries. It is Fired Up with CJ, now available on iTunes. Our guest today, Linda Grewal, author of Life-Saving Lessons, Note from an Accidental Mother. This is Brandon. I'm filling in for Cassandra today. We'll send it to you, CJ.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm CJ Liu, and we have Linda Grewal, who is sharing her story of how an entire island of 40 people, who's actually relatively close island, was actually duped by an extremely clever pedophile, and how the whole event of uncovering that there was a pedophile among their midst who had been abusing this little girl for many, many years really shook the idyllic community that she lived in, and how it also shook her own sense of safety. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Welcome back, Linda.
Thank you.
So, I mean, when you look back at the whole situation, I mean, how would you describe how it affected, how finding a pedophile among your midst affected the island, affected you, affected the way you looked at things?
From my perspective, I think the biggest change that came about, you know, by like discovering this pedophile on the island was, it really bothered me the way I interacted with kids. I became extremely paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say it takes a village to raise a child, and in this very small, close-knit community, everyone is very involved with every kid on the island. And I would think nothing of, you know, hugging any kid. Every time I see them, I, like, throw my arms around them, pat them on the head, pat them on the butt, you know, all these things. And it started making me think, wow, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. Checking into hotel with my daughter when she was 15, 16, I'm thinking, God, I wonder, do we need separate rooms?
It
really affected the way I interact with kids, and I, you know, I like to think that I'm kind of getting through that and thinking, you know, it's fine. I mean, it's not inappropriate, but it makes you look at things differently.
Yeah, and it's sad because, I mean, all those gestures are a sign of intimacy and connection. And then when you feel like, well, now I can't do those, or I'm second-guessing whether these things are appropriate. And I'm sure that was probably true of everyone on the island, right?
Yes, I think it was. And, you know, one of the things, something that comes to mind right as we're talking is one of the things when my daughter was 15, 16, one of the things that really bothered me was she had a way of getting men's attention. It was always physically.
Mm-hmm.
She would either go over and start playing with their hair or try to sit in their lap. Obviously, inappropriate. 15-year-old girl should not be climbing into a grown man's lap. It's
right.
Like one of my friends or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Giving a man a hug, not just a little hug, but I'm talking like a full-on embrace.
Right.
And trying to, it's tough, you know. I was thinking, well, you know, she'll observe me and she'll see the appropriate way, you know, to get someone's attention. Maybe is to engage them in conversation. Not everything has to be physical.
Mm-hmm.
In that, again, I started thinking, gee, everything doesn't have to be physical, and maybe I shouldn't be like touching and hugging all these kids. And it's just really a terrible thing to think.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because so much of affection for another person is through physical gestures, and so when you're always kind of second-guessing those things or not sure, that's really hard. And then also if you have a child who really doesn't know what's appropriate, it's like, well, you know, how do you – I don't know. And nowadays, it seems like everything's inappropriate anyways.
Right. Yeah, you don't hear do anything. I mean, isn't that sad?
I know. It's really sad. So did you feel a sense of, I mean, and then what was so incredible is that there were other pedophiles or other people in the island, right, that had kind of similar types of things that were hidden and
yeah, so
and
we
dark.
Were aware that we had one convicted pedophile on the island. He's been there for many years, and he's sort of ostracized, but, you know, he lives on the island. He fishes around the island. No one really socializes with him. He keeps to himself. People are obviously nervous. They don't want his kids around him. And that's, you know, a tough way to bring up a kid. You know, you're in this paradise, but, you know, they have to be told to not, you know, be alone with certain people. And it's tough, but anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. Here's the thing that's so frustrating, because in some ways I would want to still not be ignorant that, you know, there's always going to be people who are doing things that you're not happy with or doing things that are criminal. I mean, it's, whether you like it or not, and to have that affect your vision of your paradise, that, I don't know, that would just make me mad.
That was a major effect, you know, of discovering what was going on. And that was, wow, you know, this is one of the islanders are all the most coveted description of ourselves is that we're islanders and we love the island. And then, you know, it's almost like the island's poisoned by that.
Yeah. And I think it's important not to get it poisoned. You know what I mean? It's important not to, because if I think when you let those kind of dark energies and ideas kind of infiltrate, they kind of darken what's beautiful. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it'd be realistic, but not have it darken everything.
Right. And, you know, and it was dark, but it was temporary.
Yeah.
You know, and we all realize that it's still the place that we know and love. And, you know, there are some people there that have done some things, and there are bad people, and there are bad people everywhere, even on our beautiful island.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me about you had said that, you know, you reveal so many intimate details about your life, your daughter's life, and it's probably easier not to have written the book, right? I mean, it's so personal. But what gave you the conviction and your daughter the desire to reveal these really private details to other people? What impact did you hope the book would have?
Hey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I know we're doing a show, and I've got to move to another room because someone's talking on another phone.
Okay. Oh, no problem. So my question was that. My question, the short version of, is that you reveal so many personal details about your life and your daughter's life, and I guess I'm asking you why. What was the intention or greatest hope that you would have by publishing this book?
Well, I can tell you, first of all, because the question is usually asked, like, what does your daughter think of this? And she's been on board since way before the writing process about my writing this story. And she understands that it's our story, but it's my perspective of our story. Yeah. She's been very much in favor of this book, and her wishes, I guess her hopes for the book, are that somebody somewhere someday will read this book and sort of have the courage to, you know, to break out of a situation the way she did.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter literally physically ran from her abuser with him chasing her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a nightmare, but that's what she needed to do, and that was, you know, what got the ball rolling. She ran from him.
Mm-hmm.
So she hopes that someone will read the book and say, hey, you know what, that's what I need to do, and maybe have the courage, and believe me, I'm imagining that it took quite a lot of courage for her to do that.
Yeah, to actually stand up to your abuser and point out, like, someone's abusing me. I think that's probably, from what I understand about people who have been abused, that's probably the hardest step to take.
I'd say it is. And, you know, there's always this, and I know that on the island we all had this, why didn't she tell us sooner? You know, mm-hmm. And it just doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How does it work? I mean, I'm sure you've talked to your daughter, like, why didn't you tell us sooner? I mean, what does she say? Why isn't she? And what could you have done is there anything you could have done to help her? I don't know. I don't know,
you know, looking back, if there's anything that anyone could have done. She actually sort of spilled the beans, the whole truth and nothing but the truth at, the very first session with a counselor. And I took her to the counselor because the woman on the island said, gee, you know, this kid's been bounced around quite a bit. Maybe she should talk to someone. And so I took her, and again, we just thought she was living with an alcoholic. We didn't know the rest of the story at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was her opportunity to really open up, and she did. I'm certainly not a trained professional. I wouldn't have known what to ask. I mean, this woman, the counselor, basically asked my daughter if she had privacy in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, gee, I'd never think to ask that of anyone. I didn't, because I didn't suspect anything.
Right.
So anyway, I don't think there's anything anyone could have done to have that happen sooner. And I've learned from people who are much more experienced in dealing with, you know, victims of sexual abuse or any type of abuse, that you just never really know, especially with a kid, when the truth will come out, if ever. It just, sometimes it just comes out just with no prompting at all. You just don't know.
What, did she ever tell you why at that moment? Was it because at that point she really felt her physical life was in jeopardy, like she was in jeopardy, or life was in jeopardy, or what?
Well, I know that she physically ran from him because she was just pretty much at the end of her rope. But even, you know, after she, you know, told the truth to the counselor, and I was at that session with her, when the counselor said, well, I hope you understand, we, you know, have to call the authorities and I have to let the state know. We were on our way home, back to the island after that 1 hour session, and my daughter was saying, is he really in trouble? And I'm like, oh yeah. But she didn't know. I mean, she'd been this way. She said, well, some of the things were wrong, but gee, I didn't know he'd be like in trouble. She just didn't know. She didn't you know, how would she?
Yeah, that's a fascinating observation, because in some ways your normalcy and what you would expect is based on what you've experienced so far. So how would she have known that there was something, you know, there was someone that she needed to alert because she thought that that was normal. Anyways, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but at 15, you know, she was getting, you know, older and wiser, and she knew some of it was wrong, but she just didn't realize that it was, oh, hey, guess what? It's really wrong and it's really illegal. And yeah, he's in big trouble.
Wow. Thank you so much for being here, writing this book. And it's a fascinating read and a beautiful story. Really,
well,
it's the hero's journey that both you and your daughter took. And I loved reading it. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, make sure to stay tuned, because we're going to be talking about ending violence and how you can respond to violence yourself. So we'll be right back.